Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn. Coming up, Uhuru Kenyatta was elected president of Kenya exactly a year ago. We ask what Kenyans are thinking on this day.
The challenge is security. Everybody knows that.
I think the government is doing its best.
I believe they have not done as they promised. Yeah, you know, the problem is they promised us so much.
And Nigeria overtakes South Africa to become Africa's biggest economy. But this Nigerian tells us it means nothing to him because basic amenities are still lacking.
People are suffering for the light, for the water, for the people is suffering and they don't have all those things.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
A year ago this Wednesday, Uhuru Kenyatta was elected president of Kenya. Many Kenyans hoped that the arrival of a son of Jomo Kenyatta, the country's first president, would mark a turning point for the East African nation. The elections were largely peaceful, a welcome contrast to the post-election violence in 2007 and 8. And Uhuru Kenyatta came to power making a string of promises. So, 12 months on, what do Kenyans think of their new president? Alfred Kitty in Nairobi has been finding out.
According to Kenyans, very little has been achieved so far. A section of ordinary Kenyans have rated Uhuru Kenyatta's performance below average.
The challenge is security. Everybody knows that. But from how they have started checking it, I think they will root out the terrorists and will be back to the normal peace.
What I can say about the Jubilee performance for the last 1 year, to me is okay. It's trying to do everything they could. It's only that the security is not up to date. The promises, to me, they are trying because actually it cannot be fulfilled within 1 day. So we have to give them time up to 3 to 4 years, yeah, so that you can weigh.
I think the government is doing its best. The government is doing its best to maintain and sustain the economy of the country. Despite being challenges, I think the government is at the forehead of bringing the economy at par with those of the developed country. And I think because of the challenges that we have and a lot of opposition, I think the government is doing its best.
The Jubilee government has not done enough. Actually, like the economy is so down. Food is so expensive. Everything right now is so expensive. So I believe they have not done as they promised. Yeah, you know, the problem is they promised us so much. So when we read them with what they promised, they are doing bad. Security is so low, we are not so sure of if you're going to leave tomorrow, if you're going to wake up safe. So to me, they've done poorly. The only good thing they're doing is public relations. They're so good at smiling and, you know, going to places, visiting places, but for the mwananchi down there, they're feeling the pinch. It's not done well.
The only problem I can see right now we are facing is the security of the country. The other things, at least they are trying.
So far, so good. The progress that has been made by this government need to be supported, both locally and at the international level.
Others, however, feel that it is too early to judge the performance of a new government in power. The major success that has come to pass is the promise of free maternal care in all public health facilities, a move that was welcomed by many Kenyans. Uhuru Kenyatta's major challenge has been high cost of living, rising public debt, and high salary demand. A recent poll conducted by a research company, Synovate Kenya, indicated that over 50% of the population is unhappy. The same polls have ranked the presidency as the second most trusted institution after the media. The optimism that Kenyans had is slowly disappearing, as most of the pledges made by the Jubilee coalition during the election campaigns have never been achieved. Many Kenyans are questioning the way the Jubilee government is conducting its affairs. Insecurity is a major challenge that the Kenyatta administration is trying to come to terms with. Even as the Kenya Defense Forces fight the Al-Shabaab right at their doorstep in Somalia, threats to the internal security remain. Despite the numerous challenges the government is facing, President Uhuru Kenyatta has gone ahead to make further promises.
We committed to bringing 1 million acres under irrigation. The 1 million acres will not only double our country's maize production, but will also shift our dependence from rain-fed agriculture to a more dependable form of agriculture, enhancing food security and ultimately lowering prices for ordinary wananchi.
On the issue of rising insecurity, President Uhuru announced tough measures to curb it down.
The safety of our people and the defense of its sovereignty are among my cardinal responsibilities. We will not be intimidated. Threats to our sovereignty will indeed be met with our full might.
Uhuru Kenyatta, however, has outlined several measures, including new economic strategies, to correct the shortcomings in his government.
Alfred Kitty in Nairobi. Economic strategies are all very well, but governments find they can be blown off course by global events outside their control. It was a point made by Kenyan political analyst Brian Wanyama when I spoke to him shortly before we went on the air. But first I asked him for his assessment of President Kenyatta's popularity 12 months after he was elected.
I think we can actually say that during the election a year ago, the Uhuru government that came to power with William Ruto as vice president was quite a popular government. It was a very popular team because people's expectations were pretty high. He was highly popular then, but as for now, I'll put his popularity to around 55%. The reason is because of a number of uncovered issues that they claimed they would undertake during the campaign time. We are all aware that they came to power against the background of the shadowing ICC cases that were being, talked about. We've also had a lot of bureaucratic system, civil service, which they found in place. We've had a lot of skyrocketing unemployment and even, most importantly, insecurity issues. So I think that the negatives currently seem to have made them a little bit unpopular than they were. And maybe they have not met people's expectations the way they anticipated when they were sworn in. Indeed, we can say that maybe they have made some achievements in terms of the free maternity services in all public hospitals, which has enabled the percentage to move up from 24% to 60%. Yeah, that's quite a good show, but it has a challenge because we have had lots of resignations from doctors.
So not all the promises he made have been kept. Which broken promises annoy Kenyans the most?
I think the first promise here would definitely go to the cost of living. The promise during the campaign time by Uhuru and Ruto was we're going to reduce the cost of living. In a way, the target was to reduce the prices of the basic items. But we've seen the cost of the basic items skyrocket. And this is blamed on the VAT. The former Kibaki regime did not introduce the VAT. But the introduction of the VAT has definitely fueled the increase in prices. So one is the cost of living. Two, there has been this bit on devolution. I think that whereas the president has come out clearly to state categorically that he supports devolution, but we've seen some of his officers not giving devolution the due attention and the due support. There's also been corruption cited in high places. This he himself acknowledged that even in his office, the president's office, there was high corruption. In fact, that led to a reshuffle recently. Unemployment is equally going high and up, and that really makes the Uhuru and Ruto government a little bit unpopular.
Can you identify any factors which are preventing him from keeping his promises?
I think one would be the economic factor. Some of these economic factors, I think the global economic trend has not been very friendly, especially to the developing countries of late. So that might be a little bit beyond his reach. And then the ethnicity. Kenya as a country is mainly anchored on a ethnic background. Even during the voting, it's about bringing together groups that would support one for presidency. So if you brought together a certain group supporting for presidency, then you see the team that was left out to vote for the opposition are feeling left out in the system. So I think it has a task to improve the aspect of national cohesion by integrating people and by having an all-inclusive society.
Political analyst Brian Wanyama.
Africa Link, every weekday on Deutsche Welle.
Germany's lower house of parliament is debating the German national budget, and that, of course, includes German development aid. I've been talking to our Berlin correspondent Naomi Conrad, bearing in mind that Germany was in the process of overhauling its policy on Africa. Was any specific mention made of the continent during this debate?
Yes, there were a couple of mentions during this debate, which happened this evening in an almost empty debating chamber. So there are several initiatives, in fact, three main initiatives that the government wants to focus on this year. One is World Without Hunger. It's going to spend 70 million euros for combating hunger worldwide. Mention was there made of the Central African Republic. There's also a special program aimed at stabilizing North Africa and the Middle East, and particularly democratic development there and economic opportunities. That's a 20 million euro budget for that. Then Gerd Müller said that he just returned from South Sudan and the Central African Republic, where he had seen, I quote, hell on earth. So there's a 70 million euro budget proposal for combating refugees' misery worldwide, but as I said, with a special focus on South Sudan and the Central African Republic.
What have parliamentarians been saying in general terms about development aid?
The opposition has been quite vocal in its criticism. It said that the extra increase of 147 million euros, which the government will be spending this year, is far too little. One Green MP said it was a scandal that there was not more money being spent on development aid. There is also a lot of criticism on the overseas development assistance, which stands currently at about 0.38%. There's a lot of criticism there that it should be increased to 0.7%.
Why is a rich country like Germany so reluctant to contribute more?
That's exactly the question that opposition parliamentarians from the Green Party and also the left-wing Die Linke Party asked. At the moment, it doesn't look as if there's going to be any increase this year or next year. The left party put it down to Germany not being willing to fulfil its commitment it's made internationally. At the moment, it's unlikely that Germany will increase, if at all, but we won't reach the 0.7% commitment.
Listening to this debate, do you get the impression that Germany is now taking a greater interest in Africa?
I think Africa is very much one of the main focus regions at the moment. Germany wants to continue supporting the African Union in tackling conflict. There's going to be help for building good governance and also a focus on human rights and democracy. I think Africa is still seen as the main continent that needs development assistance, even though there's been a rethinking of how to develop it. It's more kind of a how do we help the Africans help themselves approach at the moment.
Naomi Conrad in Berlin.
Behind the headlines.
Nigeria has overtaken South Africa as Africa's biggest economy. That was announced after fresh calculations showed that its GDP, that's the combined value of goods and services, was just over $500 billion for 2013. Now, most governments overhaul their calculations every few years to take changes in the economy into account, but the last time Nigeria did this was in 1990. Financial analysts may welcome the increased accuracy, but behind the headlines, ordinary Nigerians might find it difficult to spot any immediate difference, as Sam Olukoya reports.
With Nigeria's gross domestic product, or GDP rating, the country has overtaken South Africa as Africa's largest economy. The statistics also show that Nigeria's economy does not only rely on oil and gas. Dr. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala is Nigeria's Minister of Finance.
You know what Nigerians have been wishing for an economy that is more diversified, is showing up in these numbers. Telecoms, entertainment and so on are making a bigger mark. So we have a more diversified economy. What does this mean? It means that for government policy, the direction in which we have been walking, in terms of supporting diversification, we just need to continue.
This is a soundtrack from a Nigerian movie. The film industry, popularly known as Nollywood, is one sector that has contributed significantly to the country's GDP. Ejike Asuegu is an inspiring movie actor who thinks the growing popularity of Nollywood indicates higher potentials of the business climate in Nigeria.
We came from nothing, a self-independent, private sector-driven industry that happened. It was just happenstance. We believed in the self and the collective drive and vision. And because we have a huge market in Nigeria, first and foremost, a population then of over 120. Now we're over 200 million. It shows you that the market was there.
This latest economic rating is good news for Aswegu and for many others working in the film industry. In this new phase of economic development, the government might give Nollywood some tax breaks or even subsidies. The intention is to further diversify the economy and create less dependence on income from oil and gas. But not all is glittery and gold for many in the country. For Tunde Taufik, a Lagos-based generator technician, there is nothing to cheer for. He says Nigeria's emergence as Africa's largest economy makes no meaning to him in a country where basic amenities are lacking.
Every Nigeria is the largest economy in Africa. The government is supposed to find something for us. People are suffering for the light, for the water, for the people is suffering and they don't have all those things. But the thing I want to beg our government, help us do all these things for the people.
In spite of its economic prosperity, Nigeria has millions of people living on less than $1 a day. Like Taufik, Nigeria's economic prosperity will only make sense if it comes with a corresponding improvement in their standard of living.
Sam Olukoya reporting on Nigeria's elevated status as Africa's biggest economy. And now to Malawi. As part of preparations for elections on May the 20th, that country's Electoral Commission was planning to reopen an electoral roll to members of the public on Wednesday so they could check if the personal data it contained was correct. Initial efforts to compile an up-to-date list of voters for these presidential, parliamentary and local elections had to be suspended in late March because of logistical problems. I asked our correspondent in Blantyre, George Mahango, whether work on compiling a new list of voters really had been resumed.
Yes, definitely I can confirm that work on the voters' roll verification inspection has resumed this Wednesday, and there was indeed divided turnout in quite a number of places, be it in rural and then city centres.
The election is just 6 weeks away. Do you think the new voters list will be ready in time?
Currently, according to the Malawi Electoral Commission and various stakeholders in as far as polling is concerned on May 20, the things or the materials are pretty ready because currently, just last week, MEC received some voting materials, lamps and stuff like those from the government of Zimbabwe, which Malawi could not even afford to buy. And locally, what is happening is the fact that there is massive civic education campaign going on by the National Initiative for Civic Education, which got funds from the government of Germany through GTZ.
Is it possible that the election could be postponed if things aren't ready in time?
If indeed quite a number of political parties think that a government has not done enough through the Malawi Electoral Commission, yes, polls could be suspended or could be cancelled because history has it that in 2004, voting was postponed to a later date because of some legal challenges by quite a number of opposition political parties. But this time around, the bottleneck would be that of ensuring that the voters' roll is done pretty well. But that they have resumed, it's every man's hope in Malawi that definitely there is not going to be any suspension at all.
And how much interest is being shown by Malawians in this new electoral roll? Are many people checking it to see that they've been properly registered?
A number of people, say for example today, did turn up in the commercial capital Blantyre, just like Lilongwe and Mzuzu. Suffice to say that in the rural areas, it was a little bit poor. Why? Because of maybe discrepancies to do with awareness messages. But all what I can confirm is that Malawians would like to go and vote. Why? Because they are saying that this being the 20th year of multi-party democracy, they have to celebrate celebrate it in style. Just like 50 years of Malawi's independence, they have to celebrate it in style. So they need a new leader. That's what they're going. That's what they're saying.
But were there long queues waiting to check the electoral roll?
Of course, yes, in major city centres, except for rural areas.
Now, what are the main problems the authorities face when compiling this electoral roll?
Problems to do with names, the first name and then the surname not matching. For example, if I am George Muhango, if I go to a voting centre to verify, I will be seen as if I am George Kalula, or one Mese Piri would be portrayed as Mese Jailos. So those are the discrepancies that were there, which make still things have been resolved at the moment.
Malawi is struggling with a huge corruption scandal. Do you get the impression that people are anxious to go out and vote in these elections in May so that their voices can be heard?
Definitely, and one of the major issues, as it is known locally, the Kashigate case, definitely this has brought in some enthusiasm, and is of course a political tool to quite a number of political parties. It's a political manifesto. They are saying that money should not be kept at the Capitol Hill, where government is said to have blundered all the financial resources amounting to almost $100 billion. So they say they need drastic change so that money is found at local councils. That is why there is this call for Malawi to have local ward councillors who should be captains of financial resources.
George Mahango in Blantyre.
Opinion.
And in Opinion this week, we return to our top story, to Kenya, and turn the clock back 12 months.
I am humbled that in a free and fair election, you, the people of Kenya, have placed your trust in me to lead our nation as your next president.
Uhuru Kenyatta. And this is what one Kenyan resident thinks of the government's performance so far.
The problem is they promised us so much. So when we read them with what they promised, they are doing bad. Security is so low, we are not so sure of if you're going to leave tomorrow, if you're going to wake up safe. So to me, they've done poorly.
And the question we'd like to ask you this week is, what do you think President Uhuru Kenyatta has achieved for the people of Kenya over the last 12 months? That question once again, what do you think President Uhuru Kenyatta has achieved for the people of Kenya over the last 12 months? Do send us your views in a text message to country code 49 160-957-59510 or in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or in a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany.
Listen to Africa Link where and when you want. Subscribe to our podcast and you will get the latest edition sent to you. Log on to mediacenter.dw.de/English/podcasts and look out for the Africa Link podcast. Africa Link, bringing you the story where and when you want it.
And we've almost come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. But before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. We've been reporting on the first anniversary of Uhuru Kenyatta's election as the President of Kenya. Opposition parliamentarians in Berlin have been criticising the level of German development aid. And we've also been hearing about efforts to complete a new voters list in Malawi before elections there next month. Africa Link returns at the same time tomorrow. Do join us if you can. As always, thank you for listening. From me, Mark Caldwell. Bye now.